Broadcasting. The voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily via the internet address www.parstoday.com/en. You can also listen to the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Intelsat 902, and Eutelsat satellite, as well as via internet. You can also listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for more details.
And now we enlighten you with verses 218 to 219 from the chapter Al-Baqarah from the Holy Quran, recited by Ali Parhizgar.
Bismillahirrahmanirrahim. Innal ladhina amanu wal ladhina hajaru wajahadu fi sabilillah. أُولَئِكَ يَرْجُونَ رَحْمَةَ اللَّهِ أُولَئِكَ يَرْجُونَ رَحْمَةَ اللَّهِ وَاللَّهُ غَفُورٌ رَحِيمٌ يَسْأَلُونَكَ عَنِ الْخَمْرِ وَالْمَيْسِرِ قُلْ فِيهِمَا إِثْمٌ كَبِيرٌ وَمَنَافِعُ لِلنَّاسِ قُلْ فِيهِمَا إِثْمٌ كَبِيرٌ وَمَنَافِعُ لِلنَّاسِ وَإِثْمُهُمَا أَكْبَرُ مِنْ نَفْعِهِمَا وَيَسْأَلُونَكَ مَاذَا يُنْفِقُونَ قل العفو وكذلك يبين الله لكم الآيات لعلكم تتفكرون ويسألونك ماذا ينفقون قل العفو كذلك يبين الله لكم الآيات لعلكم تتفكرون.
In the name of God, the compassionate, the merciful. Surely those who believed and those who fled their home and strove hard in the way of Allah, these hope for the mercy of Allah, and Allah is forgiving, merciful. They ask you about intoxicants and games of chance. Say, in both of them there is a great sin and means of profit for men, and their sin is greater than their profit. And they ask you as to what they should spend. Say, what you can spare. Thus does Allah make clear to you the communications that you may ponder.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.
A reminder of our top stories: Israeli forces demolish more residential buildings in Gaza City, killing dozens more civilians as part of their genocidal war on the besieged territory. Hamas calls for global boycott and isolation of Israel over the regime's attempt to assassinate the movement's negotiating team in airstrikes on the Qatari capital. And the Yemeni army conducts another anti-Israel operation, hitting the regime's Ramon airport and a military target with several drones. Hello from Iranian capital Tehran. I am Bahman Nouri, and this is news. Gaza City and its residential towers remain the main targets of Israeli attacks in Gaza as the regime presses ahead with its genocidal war across the territory. According to Palestinian sources, Israeli forces destroyed 16 buildings in Gaza City, including three residential towers, on Sunday. One of the regime's latest strikes hit a tent for displaced people behind Gaza City's Capitol Mall, killing six civilians, including three children. Another strike targeted a residential tower in the Ar-Rimal neighborhood, causing multiple injuries, extensive destruction, and a large fire at the site. Earlier, over a dozen Palestinians were killed and more than 100 injured in strikes on Gaza City's Tel al-Hawa neighborhood. Two more Palestinians died of malnutrition, raising the toll of Israeli starvation policy to 422, and that includes 145 children. Nearly a dozen aid seekers were also killed by the regime forces. The death toll from the Israeli genocide has surpassed 64,870, with over 164,600 others injured. The United Nations has once again expressed serious concern over the dire living conditions in Gaza amid intensified Israeli bombardments. The UN Agency for Palestinian Refugees warned that the territory has been reduced to a wasteland which is unfit for human living. The agency added that Israel has launched a large-scale offensive in northern Gaza, particularly Gaza City, where thousands have sought refuge in camps. UNRWA said Israel's relentless attacks have forced thousands of people into overcrowded shelters and makeshift tents without clean water, sanitation, or safety. It added that at least 10 of its facilities, including 7 schools and 2 clinics, have been struck in the past 4 days. The agency warned that ongoing Israeli attacks have left residents of Gaza City terrified and traumatized, with a severe blockade on food aid as intensified hunger, especially among children. UNRWA called for immediate ceasefire in Gaza and an urgent global action to end the suffering of civilians in the war-ravaged territory. Political commentator Sarah Flounder says the Israeli genocide in Gaza is being committed in a way to demoralize the whole world.
There is a crime happening in real time, publicly, block by block, and it is exactly the image that the Zionists want to show the whole world and the people of Gaza. It's being done in a way to intentionally demoralize the world by saying that we can do anything and you can't stop us because we have the world's biggest superpower behind us. As a matter of fact, we're the enforcers of US rule. So this is a public crime. The real question is what the world will do in response. Of course, the bombing of surrounding countries, even countries that have paid multi-billion dollars in protection money, such as Qatar, it means there's no sovereignty. But for the people of Gaza, especially Gaza City, right next to where the tents of people, apartment buildings that were remaining standing, long since with no water and no electricity.
Hamas has sent an urgent memorandum to Arab and Muslim foreign ministers and international organizations about Israel's attempt to assassinate its Gaza ceasefire negotiators in the Qatari capital. Hamas emphasized that it has exercised maximum flexibility to halt the Israeli genocide in Gaza, but the regime has sabotaged every agreement through assassinations, adding new conditions, and committing massacres. It added that Israel has used ceasefire negotiations only as a cover to buy time for further crimes. The movement said it seeks to achieve the Palestinian people's rights to freedom and independence, and its leaders must not be treated as military targets. Hamas warned that the far-right Israeli regime is opening a dangerous door to extremism and terrorism in the region and the world. It urged the international community, as well as Arab and Islamic countries, to pressure Israel to stop the genocide in Gaza, end its international law violations, and boycott and isolate Israel politically and economically. In Spain, the final stage of the Vuelta cycling race was cut short after pro-Palestinian activists blocked a route protesting the presence of the Israeli team.
Today, Palestine won La Vuelta. The truth is that Spain and Madrid came together like never before. There will be no awards ceremony. It has already been cancelled. We did it. We won today. The people are greater than everyone else. The people are greater than the government. And Palestine will be free.
Protesters carrying anti-Israel banners partly blocked the road and forced riders to stop. Clashes broke out as the Spanish police attempted to disperse the demonstrators. The disruption is part of a wave of protests that have marked the race over the past week, with pro-Palestinian activists demanding the exclusion of Israel Premier Tech from the competition amid the ongoing war on Gaza. Spanish Prime Minister Pedro Sanchez has expressed his support for demonstrators, saying he admires those who mobilize for just causes. Meanwhile, in the Netherlands, the thousands of demonstrators marched through the streets of Groningen, holding a long red banner in a symbolic protest against what they describe as their government's complicity in the Gaza crisis. In the UK, City of Birmingham campaigners, politicians and members of the public have gathered to tackle the Palestinian issue and Israel's occupation of Palestine. Saeed Bureza reports.
For decades, the so-called two-state solution to the Israel-Palestine question has dominated Western diplomacy, enshrined in the controversial Oslo Accords of the early 1990s. 30 years on, many here say that solution was dead on arrival.
It's impossible now, in any event, even if it was desirable, which I don't think it ever was, to actually create a two-state proposition, because the West Bank, for example, has been completely atomized by the Zionist entity. So I think we need to rip that idea up and to start again. And what we're campaigning for is a one-state solution.
Critics of the two-state solution, now pushed for by Saudi Arabia and France at the United Nations, also pointed to Israel's ongoing genocidal assault on Gaza.
What they are actually doing is consolidating the gains made by the Zionist entity, which includes the absolute annihilation of Gaza, the continued terrorism that is being taken place by Israeli settlers in the West Bank. And what they actually want to do is consolidate the 80-odd years of Zionist settler colonialism.
The debate, organized by activist independent movement, grew heated, with some arguing for a state, including all Palestinians and those who live in what's now called Israel, if they wish to stay.
Every Palestinian should have the right to return. And Israelis who decide they want to stay will have obligation to assist the Palestinian to settle back to their home, and that means everywhere.
Opponents of that view argue it resembles South Africa after the end of apartheid, when many of the immigrant white population got to stay.
The concept of, you know, what is mine and what is yours is so simple, and actually people are trying to pretend there's shades of grey. No, actually it's very black and white. There's Palestine, and there's a fake terrorist construct called Israel that needs to be dismantled.
Dr. Ali also suggests that armed struggle by Palestinians is the only pathway to one state being materialized.
Armed struggle is legal under international law. And rather than, you know, and what we should be doing is arguing for deprescription of perfectly legitimate legal organizations under international law. We should be never condemning resistance.
At the end of the debate, it was obvious which motion received more support.
With the Israeli regime openly rejecting Palestinian statehood as it commits genocide in Gaza,
The debate here mirrors a wider global reckoning. The two-state solution has repeatedly failed. The consensus here, a one-state solution with equal rights for all the indigenous inhabitants of historical Palestine. Saipur is up from Birmingham, United Kingdom.
Several prisoners' rights organizations say Israel has abducted at least 540 Palestinians in the occupied West Bank during the month of August alone. The rights organization said the August figure brings the total number of Palestinians abducted in the West Bank since the beginning of the Israeli military aggression to over 19,000, including nearly 600 women and over 1,500 children. It also excludes thousands of Palestinians abducted from Gaza, including those seeking humanitarian aid. According to the report, the abductions are accompanied with violent night raids, destruction of property, physical assaults on detainees and their families, and death threats. The report added that abductees' families are often held in as hostages during the raids, and field interrogations are frequently conducted in homes or makeshift military posts. The Yemeni army has launched another anti-Israel operation in support of the Palestinian people, striking the regime's targets in the occupied territories with drones.
The UAV force of the Yemeni armed forces conducted a qualitative military operation involving four drones. Three drones targeted Ramon Airport in the Ar-Rashrash area, while the fourth hit a military site in the Negev region of the occupied Palestine. The operation successfully met its intended objectives.
Sari said the strikes were carried out in response to the crimes of genocide and starvation committed by Israel against the Palestinians in the Gaza Strip. He added that the operation also came in retaliation for the Israeli aggression against Yemen. Sari affirmed that Yemen will continue to uphold its religious, moral, and humanitarian responsibilities towards its brothers in Gaza until Israel's aggression against the territory ends and its siege is lifted. Let us now cross over to Sana, as Hussein al-Bukhaiti, activist and political commentator, is joining us to discuss the issue more. Hussein, very good to have you on the program. What can you tell us about these recent retaliatory operations?
As Mr. Hesri have said, that they have launched four drones. The focus on this attack is on Ramon Airport, south of occupied Palestine. That airport was opened in 2019 to take some of the pressure on Ben-Gurion Airport in Yaffa, central occupied Palestine. And of course, this airport, it has the longest runway, so it can receive larger planes than any other airport inside occupied Palestine. And some of those planes, of course, they are military supplies planes that actually help in designed State of Israel to keep and to continue its attack and genocide toward the Palestinian people in Gaza. Just Yemeni, those attacks actually shows that all the retaliation attack from the Zionist state of Israel against Yemen, it only is targeting and focusing on civilian infrastructure and targeting like they did a few days ago by targeting a newspaper in headquarters inside Sana'a, central Sana'a, which has resulted to the death of more than 50 Yemeni civilians and injured more than 150. So those attacks, actually, they are taken, they are being conducted on a daily basis. Just in the last 48 hours, Yemeni have launched in a total 8 drones and as well 2 ballistic missiles against different area inside occupied Palestine, and the main focus was on Ramon Airport this time.
Thank you so much, Hussein, for the update and also your insightful comments. Hussein al-Bukhaiti, activist and political commentator, joining us from Sana'a. Mathias Fandiari, an Iranian academic, has now been detained in France for 200 days amid growing calls for her release. As diplomatic efforts continue for her release, activists and Fandiari's family highlight the broader issues of free speech and political motivations behind her continued imprisonment.
Today marks the 200th day since the illegal detention of Iranian academic Mahdi Esfandiari in France. Esfandiari, who is 39 years old, has been detained since February 28. According to Esfandiari's friends and family, her house was thoroughly searched by security personnel turning the incident into something eerily resembling a kidnapping. For 2 days following her arrest, no information about her whereabouts was disclosed. Furthermore, French authorities refused for an entire month to provide detailed information to the Iranian Foreign Ministry, which intervened at the family's request. The young woman is accused of, quote, advocating terrorism for having participated in a telegram channel denouncing the ongoing genocide in Gaza. To justify her continued detention, some investigators claimed that she was acting, quote, under Iran's influence, and that this was a case of interference. Accusations her lawyer, Maître Nabil Boudi, denounces as unfounded and purely political. Iranian authorities have repeatedly called for her release, describing her detention as unjust and politically motivated. Earlier this week, Iran's Foreign Minister Abbas Araghchi said Tehran is close to reaching a deal with Paris that will release the Iranian female academic. He said a lot of activities have been done in this regard, adding that Esfandiari's release in exchange for French prisoners in Iran is now approaching its final stages. The top Iranian diplomat didn't give a time frame for the exchange, saying Iran's judiciary and security institutions are also involved in the process. Since her imprisonment, two requests for conditional release have been rejected, first by the Paris court in June, then by the Court of Appeal in July. Esfandiari is now in Fren prison, located 470 kilometers away near the capital, Paris. This considerable distance has made it extremely difficult for her family and friends to pursue her case or provide her with any form of support. She happens to be a linguist with a degree in French language from Lumiere University and has lived in the French city of Lyon for the past 8 years. She works as a professor, translator, and interpreter at Lumiere University. Activists, neighbors, and supporters of Esfandiari are denouncing what they see as a serious violation of freedom of speech. Her case is gaining increased attention as calls grow for her immediate release.
And with that, we bring this news bulletin to an end. Thank you so much for staying with us.
Can we not see how the planets look like diamonds in the sky? And everything on earth was created for you and I. Can we not see?
like smiling at your fellow man, or looking up at the velvet sky. And sometimes it makes me wonder why we're all still here. Do we feel a deeper meaning? It's all a game. Do we think it's all a game? Do we think it's all a game? Do we think it's all a game?
Ocean of Dua.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. الحمد لله رب العالمين ثم الصلاة والسلام على محمد وآله الطاهرين.
In the name of Allah, the Beneficent, the Merciful. Hello everyone, dear brothers and sisters. I am Sayyid Muhammad Hassan Mudarrisi, and we're going to be with you with another edition of the Ocean of Dua. And in this version of the program, we are trying to cover some of the names of the Almighty Allah that are recommended to be recited to invoke Him for obtaining benefits. So stay with us.
Allahumma salli ala Muhammadin wa ali Muhammad wa ajjil farajahum wa al'an alahum ajma'in.
Dear listeners, Al-Khafid is another name of the Almighty Allah, which means the Humiliator. This has been the Sunnah and tradition of the Almighty Allah. He brings down some people who have been in state of power, literally illegitimate power, and the tyrannical rulers and others, he brings them down, and they will be humiliated. And some others, who are called the Mustadhaf, the people whose rights had been taken from them, will be the top notch again. So Al-Khafid, the Humiliator, can be recited for many times in a day to get satisfaction of any legitimate desire.
Walhamdulillahi ala afwihi ba'da qudrati walhamdulillahi ala tuli anatihi fi ghadabi wa huwa qadirun ala ma yuri alhamdulillahi khaliqil khalq باسط الرزق فالق الأصباح ذي الجلال والإكرام والفضل والإنعام الذي بعد فلا يرى وقرب فشهد النجوى.
Another name of the Almighty Allah that can be recited in the beginning of our du'as or while we're invoking Him is the name Al-Latif, the Benign. The Almighty Allah is kind towards His servants, and it is recommended to recite this name regularly, Al-Latif. Of course, all the things we are mentioning in this program, dear listeners, have some different conditions to be met if We want to achieve the results. But whatever happens, reciting these names of the Almighty Allah will bring more the attraction of the Almighty Allah, and we can gain more benefits, especially while we are invoking Him and reciting dua. Another name is Al-Malik, the Sovereign. This name and reciting it is really useful to retain wealth and power and to hold sway over the subordinates. And since by believing in this name, we consciously know that we can't refer to anyone else for help, this name can be recited to have freedom from wants so as not to be forced to go to others for help. Dear listeners, Al-Mu'min is another name of the Almighty Allah to be recited if we want to gain more benefits while we're invoking Him. But the word Mu'min doesn't mean believer. This means the reliable protector, the one who keeps us safe. And yet he's not kept safe by anyone else. He is safe within. So that's why he's called Al-Mu'min, which means the reliable protector. Among the other names of the Almighty Allah, which is closely related to this one, Al-Mu'min, is the name Al-Muhaymin, the defender.
Why do we make supplication? And why do we call out to Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala? Is it because God is not aware of our needs? God is Al-Alim. He knows all of our needs. Is it because God needs convincing? God is known as Al-Jawad. He is the source of generosity. Then why am I making dua to Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala? The dua is a journey of realizations. When a person goes to the ocean and he takes with him a bucket that can carry 4 liters of water, the ocean is infinite. In as much as your vessel is large, that is the amount of water that the ocean will give you. And therefore, our goal is to expand our capacity. Rumi has a very beautiful poem. He says, "Har khujo mushkil javab onjo ravad." Wherever there is a problem, that is where the answer will come. Wherever there is a vessel, that's where the water will come. Don't go seeking for water. Instead, create the thirst within you. So that the water may burst forth from above and from below you. Experience that realization that you need God, and the mercy will God will come towards you.
Paradise, thank you Allah, now that we're here, feeling so good about all the things that we went through, knowing that God speaks with us too. It's not a dream, this is so true, and we know we'll be here forever. Feeling is indescribable, knowing that this is our reward.
The ocean of dua.
But the point is that reciting this name will not help remove the difficulties, but to overcome the difficulties in daily life. Since not all the difficulties in our lives are just punishments of the Almighty Allah. Maybe some of them are just for mere upgrades. And the one who is suffering from these difficulties and calamities hasn't done anything wrong in his life. And the difficulties are most of the time the start of the favors of the Almighty Allah, as they were just so in the case of the great prophets of the Almighty Allah. And the last name that will be discussed in this program is the name Al-Khaliq, the Creator, which is closely related to the Originator, which is another name of the Almighty. So the Almighty Allah is the one who has created all things. He is the absolute cause. And since He is the one who has created them all, He is the all-knowing and all-aware. Of course, all the things we are mentioning in this program, dear listeners, have some different conditions to be met if we want to achieve the results. But whatever happens, reciting these names of the Almighty Allah will bring more the attraction of the Almighty Allah, and we can gain more benefits, especially while we are invoking him and reciting dua. And it is also said that this name, Al-Khaliq, purifies the heart and the mind of the reciter. Thank you, dear listeners, for staying with us in this program. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Thank you, dear listeners of IRIB English, for listening to us. If you have any question regarding our programs, feel free to email us at englishradio@irib.ir. Also, visit our website at parstoday.com. Until the next program, take care and goodbye.
Life is full of choices. Choose the best option. Visit us at parstoday.ir/en. IRIB English Radio. Palestine Declassified.
Hello, I'm Chris Williamson. This is Palestine Declassified. We're the only show that's dedicated to investigating and exposing the Israeli regime's global war against solidarity with the illegally occupied people of Palestine. In today's show, we'll be investigating who's behind the Together for Palestine concert that's being staged at the Wembley Arena on the 17th of September. In our first report, Atifa Chakra takes a look at who's involved beyond the artists who will be performing there and has some surprising revelations about a number of the behind-the-scenes individuals and organisations.
A huge concert is planned at Wembley Arena in London under the title Together for Palestine. A long list of acts are performing, including Brian Eno, Damon Albarn, Hot Chip, James Blake, Jamie XX, Paloma Faith, and Nai Barghouti. The Together for Palestine event website says, every penny donated will go to supporting Palestinian-led humanitarian organizations saving lives under fire. All funds will go through Choose Love, a UK-registered charity who supports local partners in conflict zones. So who gets the funds? It doesn't say. If we look on the Choose Love website, we find that the charity has partners in both what it calls Israel and what it calls the occupied Palestinian territories. Its Israel partner is the New Israel Fund, a Zionist funding mechanism which claims to be interested in human rights, but will not support even mild actions like BDS. Amongst its Palestinian partners are the International Rescue Committee, an organization headed by former British Foreign Secretary David Miliband, and set up originally by the CIA. Choose Love is based in the UK and the US, and amongst its many funders in 2023, Combined Jewish Philanthropies, Goldman Sachs Gives, Jewish Communal Fund, Kahane Foundation, Open Society Foundations, and Shapiro Foundation, all of which are Zionist, and the Rockefeller Brothers Fund, widely known as a CIA pass-through. Choose Love says that it is administered by an innocent-sounding group called PRISM, the Gift Fund. But further investigation reveals an altogether different picture. PRISM, the Gift Fund, was set up by Ann Joss. Joss is described by the Jewish Chronicle as an Orthodox Jew who co-runs private equity firm Regent Capital with PRISM co-founder Gideon Lyons. She ran the Zionist funding agency, the New Israel Fund UK, in the 1990s, and when younger, she traveled to occupied Palestine and spent time at a religious seminary, as well as having been chair of the Manchester University Jewish Society, which is the Manchester branch of the Zionist Union of Jewish Students. The charity operates as a donor-advised fund, a mechanism to obscure public knowledge of where funding for recipients originates. The charity, unsurprisingly, is deeply embedded in the Zionist movement. It runs the activities of the Jerusalem Foundation, which is engaged in ethnic cleansing in East Jerusalem, as well as at least two other Zionist family foundations: the Bluston Charitable Settlement, of which Ann Joss is a trustee, and the Pels Trust, which also give to the IOF and other genocidal charities. Have Brian Eno and the other artists involved been hoodwinked?
As usual, I'm joined in the studio by David Miller, who's the UK's foremost scholarly critic of Israel and our resident expert. He's a co-director of the lobbying watchdog Spinwatch and a senior research fellow at the Centre for Islam and Global Affairs at Istanbul Zeyim University. And I'm delighted that Vanessa Bealey is joining us once again as our guest contributor today. She's a highly respected and courageous award-winning British investigative journalist, and you can catch much of her output on UK Column and bealey.substack.com. Welcome to the show. David, I wonder whether you're disappointed in any way by the revelations about who's behind this Together for Palestine concert.
Well, I'm perennially disappointed with the Palestine Solidarity Movement, I have to tell you. But yes, this is a pretty extraordinary set of events, a range of acts playing who are known for their solidarity with the Palestinian people. And this looks like a big, you know, event which could raise significant sums to relieve the suffering of Palestinian people through Palestinian-led organizations in the West Bank and indeed in Gaza. But it turns out that the organization that is involved has significant contacts and relationships with Zionist organizations, not least of which, of course, is giving money to the New Israel Fund, which, as we know, is engaged in funding genocidal Zionist organizations and refuses to fund even limited reform campaigns like BDS. And also that it has significant funds coming from Zionist organizations, including some of the big Zionist philanthropy foundations in the US and in other places. So it's very disappointing to see that, and it really makes you wonder whether there is any part of the Palestinian Solidarity Movement as it's currently constituted which has the liberation of Palestine and the ending of Zionism in sight.
Right, okay. Well, Vanessa, I mean, what do you make of Choose Love's apparent links to the Zionist entity?
Certainly, they're very clear that there are links back to agencies that are supporting the Zionist genocide in Palestine. This shouldn't be surprising because, in reality, the Zionist entity and the Zionist movement have been infiltrating British society and British soft power NGO complex for years in order to effectively bring about the destabilization of the region and the final solution, as they describe it, in Palestine, which is the ongoing genocide that we've seen, of course, since 1936 onwards, but in intensification since the 7th of October.
Well, David, what about the Choose Love's funding sources that were mentioned in the report there?
So if you look back at their history, back to 2015, 16, 17 and onwards, you see that they get a whole range of different organizations giving them funds, including a lot of Zionist foundations, some of the big our foundations in North America, the big Zionist foundations called the Jewish Philanthropies and others, and including also some British Zionist foundations who have been giving them money. And also in there is the Rockefeller Brothers Fund, which of course is a well-known, it says in the film there, a CIA pass-through. Now what that means, of course, is that in the in previous decades, that what would happen is that the Rockefeller Brothers and the Ford Foundation and other big foundations would take money from the CIA and would pass it on to other organizations. So it would disguise the role of the CIA in pushing money out to what were effectively CIA assets. Now that appears to be what's happening with Choose Love, and there are a whole range of other organizations which are funding it, which indicates that there are questions to be asked about its activities. It's not just about helping refugees or relieving suffering in earthquake regions or after disasters. It's also about, it looks like, pursuing the interests of powerful actors, including in the national security state in the US and perhaps even elsewhere.
Mm. Yes, indeed. Well, Vanessa, I mean, do you think Choose Love should be transparent then on who will receives the funds that's being raised or will be raised by the Together for Palestine concert?
Yeah, of course it should. And actually the organizers of the concert and any affiliates of Choose Love should be demanding transparency when one looks at the sponsors of Choose Love. It is heavily infested by Zionist or supporting organizations and those that advocate for Israeli supremacy in the region. And therefore, all transparency should be demanded from Choose Love as to exactly where those funds are going. When they're focusing on what they term a refugee crisis, but not focusing on the cause of that refugee crisis, questions need to be raised.
Well, David, I mean, do you know what's going on with PRISM, the gift fund, which I understand is actually no longer involved with Choose Love? I mean, does that separation indicate that Zionist influences have been removed?
No, as I've been saying, there's tons of Zionist money going into Choose Love itself. But this relationship with PRISM, the gift fund, was really very interesting. It appears to have stopped from the 1st of May 2024 when the charity Choose Love has declared itself independent. Now, what would happen before is that the PRISM, the gift fund, would tax the income, and so it wouldn't all go on to the donors, the donees, sorry. So, but PRISM, the gift fund, is a really very interesting organization set up by this Zionist hedge fund manager, Anjos, who also is a trustee on some charities which give to genocidal Zionist organizations, both the occupation forces and indeed illegal settlements. And PRISM, the gift fund itself, actually runs the operations of some of these charities, including the Peltz Trust, which is one of them, and the Bluestone Charitable Trust as well. But most notably, and there's tons of others, actually, if you look at our website, powerbase.info, you can see the entry for the PRISM gift funds gives a whole range of charities they fund. But the most important one to mention, just so people understand, is that it runs the funding operation of the Jerusalem Foundation, which we've of course talked about in this show before. Yeah. It has a UK branch, it has branches in other countries, and it directly sends money to colonise East Jerusalem and to make sure that the Palestinians are pushed out and ethnically cleansed East Jerusalem. And this should be an organisation which should not be allowed to function, far less it's actually run by this other charity which allows people to pass money through so you don't see where the money is coming from.
Sure. Right. Okay. Well, Vanessa, I mean, what's your thoughts then on Choose Love? I mean, they seem to give to Zionist recipients like the New Israel Fund and also to the so-called liberation of Syria.
Look, any organization that supports the so-called liberation of Syria should be considered questionable. When we look at what has happened in Syria since December 2024, we've seen the destruction of Syria's sovereignty, its ability to defend itself against the Zionist entity with collaboration from the new Al-Qaeda government headed up by Jolani, an asset of Israel and the West and of all the hostile states that have brought about the downfall of Syria. What we've seen is the expansion of Israel, of course, into Syrian territory, the bombing on a regular basis, even recently, of Syrian installations and infrastructure. So any organization that is supporting the so-called liberation of Syria is effectively enabling Zionist expansionism and Takfiri massacres and genocidal intent in the region also.
Well, our next report delves into the activities of two of the directors of Together for Palestine.
In the small print of its website, Together for Palestine discloses that the event is independently organized by T4P Events in aid of Choose Love's vital fundraising. What is T4P Events? It's a company registered at Companies House on the 29th of May this year. It has two directors, Anna Catherine Nolan and James Sadri. Let's have a look at their background. James Sadri says he is a migrant and has three links on his Instagram page to campaigns he has worked in, as well as T4P Events. There is Led by Donkeys and the Syria Campaign. The Syria Campaign is a public relations outfit created to give PR cover to the British intelligence operation known as the White Helmets, which involved itself in war crimes in pursuit of regime change in Syria. Perhaps the most famous Syria Campaign output was Killing the Truth, a dossier full of lies intended to suggest that skepticism about fake chemical weapons attacks in Syria were Russian disinformation. Anna Nolan was also involved in founding the Syria Campaign. In fact, Nolan claims to have been on the advisory board of the White Helmets since 2019 and is still on it. In 2017, she personally went to collect the Good Housekeeping Women of the Year Award given to Syrian heroes described as the Women of the Year White Helmets. Obviously, the publicity did not mention the most senior woman in the White Helmets, Emma Winberg, who ran the operation and is a serving MI6 officer, as was revealed after her husband, James Lemessurier, was found dead outside their flat in Istanbul while she reportedly slept. The Syria Campaign also received support from the U.S. intelligence community, funneled through the Rockefeller Brothers Fund and the National Endowment for Democracy and other sources. This is indicated by Nolan's history with regime change propaganda, which goes back before her involvement with the Syria Campaign. In fact, she spun the Syria Campaign out of a PR firm called Purpose in 2014. At the time, connections between Purpose and the Syria Campaign were denied as a crank conspiracy, but now Nolan publicly admits that she worked on the Syria Campaign while still at Purpose. In their 2024 impact report, Choose Love admits that it gave the White Helmets over $500,000 to put on their fake show of digging for secret prisoners in Sitnaya prison after the fall of the Assad government. Even the White Helmets had to admit that their operation failed to find any secret areas or prisoners. $500,000 wasted. Why is Choose Love using a firm with British and U.S. intelligence connections to run a pro-Palestine music event?
Well, David, I mean, what would you say to those who claim that the views and actions of these people on Syria, I mean, isn't really relevant to Palestine?
Well, first of all, of course, the question of Syria is tremendously relevant to Palestine. The collapse of the Assad government was a key element of the axis of resistance, which is the only thing which can seriously, materially challenge the Zionist entity. But second of all, this is an operation which is run and directed by MI6, which is an intelligence operation, which makes these people, both of the directors of this firm who are put on this event, actual MI6 assets, right, if not themselves agents. And of course, they've also had involvement with American intelligence, the National Endowment for Democracy, as well as the Rockefeller Brothers Fund. And the NED is known as a face for the CIA after the CIA was previously exposed for passing money through organizations like the Rockefeller Brothers Fund in the 60s.
Sure.
So this is deeply, deeply concerning. And it's clearly of relevance because you have to ask, why are MI6 or MI6 assets involved in putting on an event which is supposedly for Palestine?
It doesn't
make any sense at all.
No, indeed. Is it part of some sort of sophisticated ruse, isn't it, then?
Well, we would need to look deeper. I mean, the company which is doing the PR for this has now admitted what Palestinian organizations are going to receive the funding, which they hadn't publicly done before. So we will need to look into that further.
Yes, no, absolutely. Well, Vanessa, I mean, Anna Catherine Nolan and James Sadri, I mean, have relentlessly labeled you as a Putin apologist and sought to smear you, haven't they? I mean, what would you say now, given all that's happened in Syria?
I would say that Anna Nolan and James Sadri, who were part of the Syria campaign that was established by Ayman Asfari, who is not only being investigated or was investigated by the Syria's fraud squad, but was also funding the former Conservative government in the UK during the regime change war against Syria. These two individuals that effectively ran the Syria campaign, now the Voices Project, that supported the regime change war against Syria in particular, of course, sponsoring and providing promotion for the White Helmet organization that was affiliated to Al-Qaeda in Syria. These two individuals now have the blood of Syrians on their hands that are being massacred by the Jolani regime that came to power as a result of their campaigning for the fall of the previous Syrian government.
Well, David, I mean, you know, you've written quite extensively, I think, about the white helmets that were mentioned in the video there. I mean, did you always share Vanessa's view about the white helmets?
No, I mean, people think that I'm quite hardline on things sometimes, and I have to say that I was naive on this question. I was naive on the whole question of the Syrian revolution, so-called revolution, and I was naive on the question of the white helmets. When I first heard what people said about Vanessa and Eva and others who had exposed the white helmets, I was skeptical of Vanessa and indeed of Eva Bartlett. And it was only when I started to do research myself that I realized that everything they had been saying was true. And the way that I realized the thing which brought me to the understanding that the white helmets were actually a PR construct was looking at the contract which had been drawn up by the Foreign Office to give £60 million that they've now given to the white helmets over this period from 2014 onwards. And the contract said that they were that part of the purpose of the white helmets was to improve the international image of the UK government. Now, I'm sufficiently au fait with the way in which British government propaganda operates to see that as a perfectly clear admission that this was a PR campaign. And what we subsequently realised it's not just a PR campaign; it was a mechanism for putting on fake chemical weapons attacks so they could provoke a reaction by military forces in the US and the UK to bomb Syria.
Sure, indeed. And when you say naive about the Syrian revolution, you're not talking about recent events, of course. You're talking about
Way back in 2011, 12, 13.
Just to be clear what you were saying there. But Vanessa, I mean, that's a pretty ringing endorsement, isn't it, from David about your reporting. And I mean, what was it that made you suspicious of the white helmets in the first place?
I think just looking at the financial backing of what was effectively a shadow state organization or construct that was not established inside Syria. It was effectively established inside Turkey and Jordan. It was trained by British military intelligence. It was backed by MI6, the CIA, through various agencies and organizations. And it was embedded with the Al-Qaeda-affiliated groups inside Syria that, of course, were also being sponsored by the West and the Zionist bloc to destabilize Syria and bring down the former Syrian government. And, you know, I think when we look at what the White Helmets were involved in Syria, they've been accused by Syrian civilians of crimes such as murder, theft, child abduction, even organ trafficking, and yet this organization funded by the West has never been subject of any kind of inquiry or independent investigation. And my question still remains, why not?
Well, David, I mean, are you concerned that Choose Love, which has given £500,000 to construct lies about the Sednaya prison, might have nefarious intentions in relation to this event then? I mean, it's pretty clear from what you're saying it is, but just to expand a little
bit. Well, of course, I mean, let's remember this Sednaya prison thing at which the White Helmets got the $500,000 for. Remember, the government of Assad had fallen and the prisoners were released from Sednaya prison. And there was this big operation. They said there would be 30,000 bodies or secret prisoners in secret sections of the prison. And it turned out that there was one person who was this secret prisoner, and they brought this secret prisoner out, and he was interviewed by CNN, and they then discovered he wasn't actually a prisoner, in the prison at all. The whole thing was a fraud, and they found not one single secret prisoner, not one single secret area of the prison, and they spent all that money just for propaganda to emphasize that this is actually a so-called liberationist, choose, love, call it, of Damascus, as opposed to a Western regime change.
Yes, indeed, and the corporate media curiously silent about the reality of what was found there. But Vanessa, I mean, just finally, do you have a message for the organizers of the Together for Palestine concert?
Yes, of course I do. I would suggest that they look very deeply into the funding and the background of the organizations that are behind the concert, and they should be raising questions about where the funding will go. Their good intentions may well end up entirely wasted if that funding ends up in the hands of either soft Zionist organizations or hardcore Zionist organizations. And also remembering that, for example, Together for Palestine, the two founders of that organization, Anna Nolan and James Sadri, again, I repeat, are responsible for the narratives that finally brought down Syria, and are now responsible for the regime in Syria that is destroying the Palestinian movement within Syria itself. So they are not friends of Palestine. They are not friends of the region. They are not friends of the resistance against the Zionist bloc in the region. And therefore, if you want your funds to go where it should go, which is to Palestinian grassroots organizations, then you should be raising questions.
Well, that's all we've got time for today, but we'll be back next week. I'd like to thank our guest, Vanessa Bealey, and of course our resident expert, Professor David Miller. Until next time, when I hope you'll join us again on Palestine Declassified, this is Chris Williamson saying bye for now.
Glorify Allah. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. so